Big day today as well across baseball's trade deadline. Joining us now to discuss it, few people better than to kick around all the news in baseball is Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, as I said, I could not imagine many other guys. You know, we love the West End connection when we're doing this this show with you. So I will start with the probably my favorite of the Blue Jays ads today, Jonathan VR. I guess we know he's going to play shortstop now until Bichette's healthy. Once Bichette is back, where do you expect to see him most? And maybe the answer is he won't have a most common position because he's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, I really think that he will be playing all over the place. He's someone who brings a lot of versatility to the team. So he can play second base comfortably or center field or left field and maybe even third base. I mean, shortstop obviously will be a position that the Jays need to give Bichette rest days at when he does come back. You're not going to see Bichette playing shortstop 7 days in a row the way he might have last year when he first came up. They need to be cautious with his knee. So you need guys who can play shortstop, and you know this. I mean, anyone watching the Jays has seen Panic doesn't really have the range for that position. He should be a second baseman. Drury doesn't hit, hasn't really done enough to justify getting regular playing time when he was up with the team. So VR gives him an upgrade there and gives him speed. That's a dynamic they haven't really had a ton of. I like this move for the Jays, too. I think for a prospect who strikes out 36% of the time at low A in Griffin Conine, you know, this is a modest acquisition cost for a major league player who helps this team right now.
So, Ben, I wanted to focus on the two arms that they added today in Robbie Ray and Ross Stripling, which was the late addition there. Where do you kind of land on the project versus results sort of debate with these two? Because they have had great results in the past. Ross Stripling and Robbie Ray were both all-stars. I think in 2017, Robbie Ray was in the Cy Young conversation for a long time. So these guys both have pretty good stuff, but the results this year have been terrible. I mean, do you think that Pete Walker can kind of figure these guys out? How much leash are these guys going to be given? I'm sort of interested to see their usage of these two guys.
Yeah, agreed. And at this point, the usage isn't super clear exactly how they're going to be used. Man, this is a project. I mean, to take on a pitcher in Robbie Ray, who leads the National League right now in earned runs and in walks, and then is trying to remake his delivery, and then ship him across the country and you know, hand him off to Pete Walker. That's a big ask for Pete Walker. And, you know, I think we have to be realistic as far as what kind of adjustments you can make on the fly in the course of this season when Ray obviously will be dealing with an intense, you know, personal adjustment on the fly as well. It's possible. And, you know, I talked to a couple of people who say that Ray has already started remaking his delivery and getting back to where he was in 2019 and before. And what he started doing this year is he really started short-arming the ball, didn't work for him, totally lost his command, and now he's taking steps to get back to that. But, you know, to do that on the fly is a difficult thing. And I think the same goes for Ross Stripling. I mean, there, you're looking at someone who has good velocity, his velocity's up, the Jays like his off-speed pitches. The results haven't been there, but I think you're probably a little bit more confident in what you're getting back when it comes to Ross Stripling. I think you probably have a clearer sense of what he gives you, and he's someone who can be on this team for a couple of years, which is nice for the Jays. But yeah, Robbie Ray, that is an unknown, and I think there are ways that they could use him in the bullpen, and he might end up being a great story for this team, but by no means do they have a lot of certainty.
Yeah, that's well said. And I have a question on Stripling, but I do just want to jump back to the VR move for a second there. With them sending Conine to the Marlins, I mean, obviously teams make deals because they believe in the player. But do you think they were able to get it all or kind of create some surplus value by trading, you know, like Conine back to the Marlins? Obviously his dad meant so much to that organization. Do you think there's any chance that he kind of had more value to them than he would have, say, to the Pirates or to Texas or to whoever else?
I think without a doubt. I think that, you know, regardless of where this leads for Griffin Conine, there's no organization in baseball that would value that name more than the Miami Marlins. And obviously his dad, Jeff Conine, had a great career there. He was part of some great teams, some of the few great teams that the Marlins have had. Jeff Conine was there for that. So, you know, it's probably a perfect fit on both sides in that sense, because, yeah, I think the Jays maybe got a little bit of a discount there when you think about who they're dealing with.
Yeah, and that I think that's a smart play to do. Anytime you can get extra value, kind of whatever form it finds itself in, good on you to do that. You talked a little bit about Stripling earlier on. I know he's had the bad home run luck this year. You know far more about the analytics and launch rate and all these types of things than I do. How much of that do you think, not to him specifically, but just kind of in general, do you think is often just a player kind of struggling with a bad run of luck, or do you think it's something that he's doing? And then I guess, to add to that question, how big of a concern is it that, you know, the field in Buffalo has been a bit of a hitter's park and you're throwing a guy who's been tossing up the odd meatball there?
That's right. And you're going to see home runs leave that ballpark for as long as the Jays play there. It certainly seems like a pretty hitter-friendly place. Today's game accepted for Jays lineup. They really couldn't get anything going. But that's besides the point. I think when it comes to Stripling, you're looking at a guy who has seen the ball leave the yard on 25% of the fly balls that he's allowed. So that rate is really high. If that sounds high, it is. Normally you'd see that rate closer to 10%, 12%. And so for Stripling, you're just not going to see one out of every four fly balls leave the park. It's not going to be sustained. So that will come down. His numbers will come down. His ERA will come down as a result of that. And the Blue Jays believe in the stuff. So that's really what you're buying here. It's not so much the stats that he's already put up with the Dodgers. You're buying what he can do going forward. And by all accounts, Stripling someone who can help. I mean, to me, he's probably more of that, you know, back end type starter, maybe swing man who gives you some length, but there's room for pitchers like that. And we're seeing it this year. There's attrition with injuries, there are COVID concerns. You just need more big league arms still. And the Jays are by no means through this thing yet. They're off to a good start. I think they should make the playoffs. That's the direction they're trending in. But you need more major league arms. And I think there's probably a higher degree of certainty that Stripling is a major league pitcher who can help a major league team right now than you would have with Robbie Ray. And so he's someone who I think will have no trouble helping this Jays staff in some ways.
So, Ben, I wanted to ask you one more trade deadline one before we moved over to a little bit of the on-the-field stuff. But I saw Ross Atkins was asked today, I guess it was on a conference call he spoke earlier, but he said that there was a bigger deal earlier in the day that fell apart because it became apparent that they weren't lining up. And, I mean, I don't think you have to do a ton of sniffing around to figure out that that was probably maybe a Mike Clevenger situation. And it looks like the Padres gave up a ton to get him. I don't have a ton of knowledge on Kyle Contrell and Josh Naylor. I know their names basically because they're Canadians. I don't really know what their level of play is. But would you have liked to see the Jays make that move? I mean, there's not that often that guys come on the market available like that with the control and the kind of pitcher that he is. Or do you think they were right to sort of balk at the high price for him?
Well, the price was definitely high. I mean, the Padres gave up a lot of talent to get him. I think if you and their prospects involved too, is a 9-player trade, something like that, pretty wild. But I think the Jays are right in this situation. I think it makes sense to add to your team, but not to give up the farm. I think that's, if you're a team in this position where you're likely to make the playoffs, but you're still a young team, you still need to save some prospects for the future. You don't want to just bankrupt the farm for 1 year where you're probably a little bit ahead of your timeline anyways. So in that context, the Jays go out and they add some players who can help the team. And it's not just the guys today. I mean, I think Taiwan Walker, my two like favorite additions that they made are probably VR and Taiwan Walker for this entire deadline.
Sure.
So Ray and Stripling, those guys help, and that's great, and we'll see what happens there. But Taiwan Walker is a real major league pitcher, and Jonathan VR does a lot of things well on a baseball field. So you're looking at two guys who really help you out there in different ways. And I think the acquisition cost for the Jays is pretty modest. So to me, this makes sense for where the Toronto Blue Jays are at. This is kind of how I probably would have drawn it up. But Clevenger, Lance Lynn, of course, you're going to check on these guys. You're going to see what the price is. I don't think you necessarily need to go and just give everything up, though. And the Padres did, because chairman, their ownership representative, essentially said heads will roll if we don't win this year. So the GM's like, all right, like, let's go out and get what we can get, which is great, and that makes sense for AJ Preller and the Padres, and it's entertaining for the rest of us, but I don't think it's necessarily a sustainable model for other teams to follow.
No, I would agree with you, Ben. That's well said. I just wanted to move over to the on the field today. Obviously, they couldn't complete the sweep, and there was a lot of talk on Blue Jays Twitter about the bullpen management again, and it seems to be a recurring theme. Let's just say that when with Charlie Montoyo's management of the bullpen, and he took out Chase Anderson in the after the fifth, which I wasn't that mad about, but then he brought in Wilmer Font, which I was mad about. Where do you stand on Charlie Montoyo's bullpen management and his in-game managing this far, so far through this season?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. I think I agree with you that taking out Anderson was fine. I also agree with you that Font wasn't the guy that I would go to in that situation. Like, I think in a bullpen where you have a lot of really good relievers, Font's probably not there for me. So I might have looked at a guy like Thomas Hatch in that situation. Going bigger picture beyond today, I found some very puzzling decisions by Montoyo. And we all know that there are different components that go into these decisions, including coaches, including the players themselves, including the front office and the analytics that they have. And Charlie Montoyo is the person who has to put all of that together and then stand up and say, this is my decision. So it's
a meat shield, basically.
Well, I get what you're saying there. I get it, Sam, but I also think, like, he's part of the engine as well, if we're going with that car analogy, right? Like, he's not just there to, like, take crap from people and be a public face. Like, he's actually part of this decision-making mechanism, too. And so, with that being the case, he's the guy who's up there accountable for these decisions. And so I'm going to say that it's on Charlie Montoyo, ultimately, that Teoscar Hernandez was hitting eighth at some point in the season, that Kevin Biggio was hitting eighth, that the Blue Jays bunt way too often. Like, those are the decisions to me that stand out as being misses, like clear mistakes. And I haven't seen a ton of them. I think if you're watching most teams, you're probably going to see managers make some mistakes. I mean, we all make mistakes in our jobs at times. It's not unforgivable. I mean, I wouldn't be working here if I was, you know, canned the first time I made a mistake. So I understand, like, having some patience here, but also as we get further into the season and we get further toward the pennant race, then the magnifying glass is going to intensify even more. And every decision that Montoyo makes is going to be more and more scrutinized, as it should be. And if he hits Kevin Biggio or Teoscar Hernandez eighth again, like, it makes no sense. Like, to me, that it makes no sense. Like, I don't, and I've tried to seek out other opinions. I'm totally not convinced. I've heard from people, you know, within the team, heard from other people around baseball. It's like, those decisions to me do not make sense, but other people will view it differently. I respect that. Maybe you guys do, or maybe you view it the same as me, but, you know, like, it's to me, Montoyo has been fine. He's been really positive. The in-game decision-making, there are points that you can point to and question. Without a doubt, there are points that you can question.
Yeah, and I will say, and I'll speak for my co-host here, because I've had enough Chuck Montoyo texts from him to know how he feels about this. We agree. Definitely a lot of puzzling decisions made. I wonder if, and I'm always somebody who I think people think of it as me trying to defend decisions or whatever. I'm just trying. I'm like you. I'm trying to understand how or why they get made. You know, I'll go back to the Font thing. It feels like he leans on him in a lot of spots he doesn't have to. And do you think that's just kind of, and again, I'm not defending this, but I'm trying to understand the process. Do you think it's partially a byproduct of just going into the season and having so little certainty about what that bullpen was going to look like, not even just in the back end, but kind of all throughout it, that he still is unsure, even though it feels like we've had somewhat of a larger sample size to make those decisions now?
Well, I think in a way this kind of reminds me of Sam Gavilio and how Montoyo went to Gavilio a couple times in leverage early in the season. Another mistake, in my opinion, by the way, because we all know that Sam Gavilio is not someone whose stuff really allows him to compete in leverage in today's game. So I think the reason I'm drawing a comparison here is because both those guys, Font and Gavilio, were pretty useful contributors on a 2019 Blue Jays team that lacked any sort of decent pitching of any kind. And so I think in a manager's mind, when they get through the grind of a season, they have guys like that who can help them and who did help them, they kind of get attached to it. And then every manager in baseball now is managing the shortest season they've ever managed, and they have to adapt. They have to adjust. and go to the players who are helping them right now, not the guys who helped you last year or even last week. Like, they, if Ryan Borucki keeps walking guys, they have to get off Ryan Borucki and leverage a little bit. It has to be who is producing right now. And I tend to agree that Wilmer Font has not been that guy. So now it's time to adjust. And if the next time we see Wilmer Font in leverage or is in leverage, then I think that's a mistake by the Blue Jays.
So, Ben, we ragged on Charlie long enough. I wanted to ask you a question about just, I mean, it's been a surprising season for the Jays. I think we expected them to be somewhat good, but for them to be this good, it's pretty incredible. It's exciting for all of us. It's really fun to watch. But in a season of early sort of surprises, what's been the most surprising thing for you?
Man, good question. Wow. Okay. Tons to choose from. My mind is going to Teoscar. Like, I just think he's been so good, and I just didn't expect it. I thought that, you know, he would be more of a 780 OPS guy, you know, who gives you pretty questionable defense, and instead, his defense has been okay. I mean, that throw today, actually, like, give him full credit. It was a great, great throw, and his throwing arm is a strength, and the offense has just been exceptional. He's been so good. It's not just the power. He's really laying off pitches as pitchers try to pitch around him more. I'm sure you guys have noticed, too, in the last couple of weeks, he's really taking pitches that he should be laying off. And so I think on a team that's had a lot of breakouts and a lot of great stories and a lot of surprises, that, I mean, am I missing someone obvious here, guys? Like, to me, I think Teoscar is probably the one that stands out the most.
Yeah, I would say Teoscar would be, for me, just the difference in Randall Grichuk's approach, and Jordan Romano, until he got hurt, was definitely one as well. But that injury seems like it's a little scary and a little spooky. They haven't said a lot about that one, so that's a little concerning. But no, I think Teoscar is a good answer, Ben.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Jordan Romano would have been in that discussion for sure, and maybe he'll get back. But yeah, at this point, it looks like he's out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, let's hope. Hopefully, it's just that. I feel like we should probably ask you as well. The guy we talked about the whole lead up to the season and what he would be and when he would come here. Now he's not part of the picture right now. Nate Pearson, do you have any update on him? I know he was kind of making some progress this weekend.
Yeah, last I heard, he was throwing up to 90 feet on flat ground, so that's a good step for Pearson. The next step would be to stretch that out just a few feet further out to 120. And then once pitchers get out to about 120 feet, then generally speaking, teams feel comfortable putting them on a bullpen mound and letting them try their stuff in that setting. So it's a slow progression. I think, you know, probably a best case scenario for Pearson would be he comes back in a couple of weeks. Like, I don't think that nothing's imminent right now. That's for sure. But he's someone who is on that progression back along with Matt Shoemaker, along with Ken Giles, who is ahead of those guys. I mean, Giles could be back maybe within a week if everything goes well. But those other two, Pearson and Shoemaker, probably further into the distance. I think if you get anything from them in the regular season to kind of assess and get them ready for the playoffs, then that's probably a good thing.
Yep, very, very well said. I think we would all like to see that. Ben, thanks for the time tonight. I know it was a busy day for you. I know you also have a write-up on sportsnet.ca recapping all the goings-on of the day, so I would suggest people check that out, because there's always more in that big, beautiful brain of yours. Ben, thanks for taking the time tonight, bud.
All right, guys. Thanks for that. Anytime.